I'm Gab. No Jules, but we brought you Future Jules. It's Stuart Robson.
Future Jules?
Well, I suspect in a few years, Jules will look exactly like you.
Ah, yes.
That is my bull. He should be so lucky.
Yeah.
He should be so lucky. Anyway, it's International Week, but we'll be talking about Cristiano Ronaldo
breaking
the men's all-time international scoring record. Very impressive in the comeback performance from Portugal. But you know what? Why don't we talk transfers? Because it was a remarkable end to the transfer window.
Yep.
We spent a lot of time talking transfers. Some people don't like it. But, Robbo, with you here, you're going to tell me how these things are actually going to work in real life on the pitch.
Yeah.
Because, I don't know, we've all worked it out. Now, the big thing, the biggest move on deadline day was sort of this domino effect. Saul to Chelsea on loan. Antoine Griezmann from Barcelona to Atletico Madrid. That is a loan with an option to buy. And Luke de Jong to Barcelona. Starting with Saul.
Yep.
And I don't want to get into prices, whatever. Just the football side of things. I'm assuming Saul is an alternative in the midfield four.
Three.
He plays with two central midfielders. He's got Kovacic, Conte, and Jorginho. Saul is an extra option there. While they wait for Billy Gilmore to return from his loan.
Yes, although for Atletico Madrid, he has played as a left wing back in recent games. And he did that a little bit last season. He's done that in the first couple of games.
He didn't like it very much.
And he's not at his best. I think he's an excellent midfield player. I think I've been disappointed with him the last couple of years. When he played in the under-21s, I thought he was the outstanding player in the tournament when Spain won the tournament. He's a player that can pass the ball, he can run with it, he can put his foot in as well. Yeah. He's got a great understanding of the game. But he seems to have gone off the boil over the last year or so. Yeah,
but this is significant for Chelsea.
It is significant
in terms of adding depth, and it's important.
I think he could play when Mason Mount plays as a sort of third midfield kind of player coming back. Saul could play that position. He could play as one of the two holding players, but be more creative than Conte.
Conte?
Yeah,
okay,
I wouldn't play him instead of Conte. I'd say if you weren't playing Jorginho, you could play Saul and Conte. That's a great combination.
Griezmann, obviously, has been talked about. The 2 years haven't worked. I wonder, there's the whole they say you should never go back thing. Mm. I do wonder a little bit because, they've added Mateus Cunha. They had Correa, who's scoring a lot of goals for them. They have Jean Felix to come back. And they have Luis Suarez. He likes to usually play with a two a lot of times when he goes with three at the back. Is this, I don't want to say it's a vanity purchase, but is it somebody they actually needed, or was it something where he said, let's roll the dice a little bit on this because the upside's very big?
I think you're absolutely right. He's a player that has never felt comfortable at Barcelona. He was actually booed in the last game, or every time he made a mistake, you could hear rumblings.
Booed more than once,
he never felt comfortable there. He knows that the crowd don't particularly like him. He's going back to a place where he's been loved. And they think they can get the best out of him. He probably thinks he can, rekindle his career and make himself the player he was. He can play, when he's at his best, and I haven't seen that for Barcelona, he can run beyond people as well. He's got a bit more pace than he's shown at Barcelona. He's become almost a stop-start player at Barcelona. I think at Atletico Madrid, if he's playing with Suarez, he'll make runs beyond Suarez at times. He can drop into the 10 position. He can go wider. I think it's a good signing for Atletico Madrid.
What's the impact on Jean Felix here?
Well, he's not playing at the moment because he's injured, but when he does come back, again, they can play with a front three with Suarez playing right down the middle. They could play with Griezmann slightly to one side and João Félix to the other side. Whether he'll do that, I doubt it. But I hope João Félix still gets a chance to show what a great player he can be.
Ángel Correa, thanks you for
not mentioning
for
it,
the
yeah.
support there.
Yeah.
Obviously, from Barcelona's perspective, we made this point. This is a move that was done to get his wages off the wage bill. And I think down the road, the way I've put it on the FC show, the way amortization works, it's the magic of amortization, is that were they to let him go a year from now, for example, it is a 2-year loan, as we're led to believe, they'd only be making an 8 million euro loss. Mm. Were it to be 2 years from now, believe it or not, they would actually make money, at least a paper gain, right? That's the beauty of it. With Griezmann going, he brings in Luke de Jong. Now, some people in Spain, harshly critical about Barcelona, say, oh, look, he lets a world champion go and they replace him with,
Sevilla. A world champion that's not playing very well for them.
Yeah, and they replace him with Sevilla's third striker, which I thought was a bit mean. Mm. But I'm assuming Luke de Jong is just going to be the big body that you might need sometimes if you need to, quote, put it in the mixer. That's the idea. He's different from the other strikers. I know Braithwaite's played a little bit up front, but you know, Braithwaite's not really a target man center forward either. Are you okay with that?
Yeah. The only thing with Luke de Jong, you've got to get crosses into the box. So the way I've seen them play in the first three games, there's still a lot of passing. There's still a lot of keeping the ball for the sake of keeping the ball. There's a lot of trying to play out from the back when it's not on to play out from the back. How are they going to get it into wide areas to get crosses into the box for him? That's going to be the key.
I'm going to make a bold prediction here. The only times we're going to see de Jong where this issue of crossing the box is going to be when the other team goes to the 8-1-1 formation to protect the lead.
Yeah.
I don't want to be being to de Jong, but I see no reason, especially
his hold-up play is not particularly good.
No. Once Ansu Fati and it's going to be the equivalent. Remember when Barcelona were losing, right? And it didn't happen very often, but under Pep and whatever. And Gerard Piqué would put his hand up and he'd go and he'd play like the last 10 minutes of a game at center forward. I think it's like that, except instead of having Gerard Piqué do that, we're going to send on Luke de Jong to go and do that.
Yeah, I think that's probably his role at Barcelona. That's
less of an issue. Let's go through some of these other transfers. Now, for those who don't know, the reason we have you on isn't just for your sparkling wit and stylishness, but it is the fact that you can provide a coach's view, a footballer's view on players sometimes better than other people can, despite Jules's best efforts. So I'd like you to tell me what these guys do and where they fit in. Now, Eduardo Camavinga is a big one. For me, it's maybe the biggest deal.
Yes.
On deadline day. Now, this was a guy who, French phenom, supposedly, didn't have the greatest season last year, but was phenomenal 2 years ago. He's still only just, he's either turned 19 or is 18 years old. Changes agents, year left on his contract, and presto, he joins Real Madrid for 30 million euros. Now, in the summer, he's going to name his own price. I think 30 million euros, probably a knockdown price already because his contract was expiring. Where does he fit in? Do you like him? Is this a long-term thing? Can he contribute straight away?
I think he can. I remember seeing his first couple of games when he first got into the to Liga.
When he was 16 years old.
And I didn't do my homework particularly well on the games, or the first game. And this chap's the best player on the field. And then when I looked down at my notes and saw that he was 16, I wasn't picking him out because he was 16. I was picking him out because he was the best player on the field. And then I obviously followed
him. And you thought it was a misprint.
And I followed him since then. And he's a player, a midfield player, that can do most things in terms of he can manipulate the ball, he can pass it well, he can get around the pitch, he can make tackles. I think he's good defensively. You know, he can do that part of the game. At the moment, I can't see him scoring goals. He's not a midfield player that's going to drive beyond the front players or shoot from long distance. I think he's more of a player that's going to be the creator. Much better than someone like Kondogbia, who's a similar age.
You're really going to depress people if you compare.
In terms of the style of play and the position that he plays and how Kondogbia at 17, 18 was thought of to be a top-class player. He's going to have to do it fairly quickly, I think, at Real Madrid. Player that you like, Odegaard, was brought by Real Madrid at a young age, and because he didn't get in the team and was given not many chances, then he drifts away and goes to a club like Arsenal. Whereas Camavinga, I think, will be a top-class player. Do you think?
I mean, again, it's slightly different because he is more of a defensive player. Do you think maybe he'll get an easier ride to settle into the Real Madrid team in the sense that you have Casemiro there? Maybe he can replace Casemiro, or at least he's seen as more.
I wouldn't see him that way. I would see him more playing the role of
Toni Kroos
or Luka Modric. You know, because he can do both sides. He'll press the ball.
But I think to get in the team now.
Yeah.
I think you're going to. We saw that at the weekend from Valverde. Valverde, I thought, really had to put in a defensive shift. Yeah. Obviously, it was in a three with Casemiro and Isco. You kind of need to do that, right?
Yeah,
on this Real Madrid side, especially when you've got those.
He's got to do both sides of the game, and he can do both sides of the game. As I said, the only thing I don't see him doing is being a midfield player that's going to run beyond front players or score goals. But all the other aspects of a midfield player, I think, he's top quality.
I'm going to amuse you now because on the FC show, Frank Leboeuf compared him to Frank Rijkaard.
Yeah,
Jules compared him to Clarence Seedorf.
Yeah,
had I been asked, I might have compared him to one of my favorite players when I was very, very young, Brian Robson.
Yeah.
Okay, which one of the three of us is most wide of the mark?
You.
Oh, thank you.
Brian Robson was a box-to-box player, great energy, great strength. He wasn't a particularly big bloke, and he would score goals. That was the main... I can't see Camavinga scoring goals.
He wasn't scoring 20 goals when he was 18 years old, was he, Brian Robson? You don't think he's got that? Oh, he was?
No, okay. Brian Robson was a box-to-box player. He was one of the hardest players to mark because he kept on running and running.
So you're going to go with either Rijkaard or Seedorf?
I would go with Seedorf.
Oh, all right.
Jules, a left-footed saver, I think.
I think that's pretty much what Jules said. He'll definitely appreciate that. Another big signing, Marcel Sabitzer to Bayern. Now, in our review on the FC, I thought to me this is one of the best moves of the summer. I'd been really critical of Bayern. In fact, I got a lot of abuse for saying Bayern need major surgery in terms of their squad. People said, oh, what are you talking about, Sané? No, I think they did. And they do, because when I said that, you had Goretzka on an expiring contract, Tolisso on an expiring contract. If you don't like Tolisso, that's fine, but you're still going to have to replace him with somebody. You know, Alaba, who could play midfield, gone. So in the end, it's Kimmich and Musiala if you want to make him play deeper. So I thought it was really important you got a guy in. Sabitzer, I think, does a lot of things. He knows Nagelsmann, obviously played for Nagelsmann. Yeah. I think that's a big thing. 50 million euros. I really like this.
Yep.
Where does he fit? Does he start?
I think he probably will. Yeah, I think he's going to start. And
ahead of Goretzka.
I think they will, depending on the formation they play. But if there's a midfield three and you had a holding midfield player, Sabitzer would be one side, Goretzka could be the other.
Thomas Müller would like that because then he wouldn't play.
Yeah, but you can't play Thomas. A new manager, Nagelsmann, might not always play Thomas Müller.
All right.
So
don't tell him that.
Yeah. But the way players have played at the moment, Thomas Müller could go back out into one of those wide areas because.
But he certainly played much better than Sané.
Yeah, Sané.
Coleman also struggled.
Gnabry had a terrible European Championship. So I think he's just got back into form.
Yeah.
By Munich.
Musiala's look good.
Yeah. So Müller could play wide. But Sabitzer is a player, and we talked about Camavinga, that can do everything you want from a midfield player. Great energy. He's got a good defensive brain. He can run with the ball. He can counter-attack. He's a decent passer as well. I think it's a good signing.
Could he also fill in for Kimmich, too, if Kimmich's unavailable?
Yeah, absolutely. I think he can, yeah.
All right, another Barcelona player going to move to North London. Actually, no, let's do Juve first. Let's come out. Otherwise, Juve fans, I think, are snubbing them. So, obviously, Cristiano Ronaldo leaves. Juventus, they've been linked with Moise Kean before. It just so happens, by the way, that on the Thursday morning that Jorge Mendes goes to Turin, meets with Juventus and tells them that Cristiano wants to go. Who happens to be there that day but Mino Raiola?
Yeah.
Right. Coincidence. No, he's probably going to talk about something else. But anyway, Moise Kean goes back to Juve. He's obviously not going to replace Cristiano Ronaldo. So Ronaldo's irreplaceable. But how do you see this signing, from what you've seen, especially of Moise Kean at Paris Saint-Germain? It was a difficult time, disappointing time at Everton. Is he the number three striker now? Is he better off doing something, after Morata and Dybala? Or is he maybe even ahead of Dybala? Or Morata?
I don't think he's ahead of Morata. Morata on his day is still a top-class centre-forward. He doesn't have his day always, but he's when he's playing, he's very best, and he's confident. He's an outstanding player. Dybala, again, depends what the manager thinks of him, because when his confidence is low, Dybala is not worth having on the pitch. When he's playing, he's very best. He's an outstanding player. Moise Kean, I think, will deliver more often than Dybala will.
What did you see from him at Paris Saint-Germain?
I thought he was
obviously better than he was at Everton. Because knock on him at Juve, when he left Juve, he said, oh, well, his head's not right. He's not serious. Not a serious pro. Let's let him go, right? And now that they bring him back, they're like, oh, look, he's matured. He's a man now.
I thought at PSG he showed better tactical acumen. He looked as though he was more disciplined in the way he was playing. I think he saw his runs better. I think he realised the importance of holding the play up and setting it up so he could get himself into the box. He is a threat when balls come into the box. And I think he has to go back to somewhere where he was initially liked, because when he first came into the side at Juventus...
He was liked at Paris Saint-Germain, too.
Yeah, so he's going to a place where he's going to be like... He wasn't liked at Everton. You could never go back to Everton because it was never going to work for him. So at Juventus... I don't think he's going to start every week, but if he gets into the side and comes on as a sub and starts scoring goals, he could get in place of Dybala.
Do you see him more in that central position or in a wide? Because I was looking at the wide areas, and obviously you have Chiesa, you have Kulusevski, you've got Cuadrado as well, who I think...
He's not going to do what Jesus has said, that I'm really a wide player that's been put into the centre-forward position. I think he has to play up front, really. I think that's where he's at his best. You know, he's got all the attributes to be a front player.
Yeah, and I think that's something that obviously Juve need just in terms of bodies. We saw, we saw Chiesa playing a two with Dybala. Mm. That Chiesa was fine, but that wasn't great. I mean, I don't want to put a limit on what Chiesa can do, but I think it's important to have strikers who are strikers so you have options.
Chiesa's much better when he's playing wide. We've seen that in the European Championships. We've seen that last season with Juventus when he's one-on-one.
Spurs have a new fullback.
Mm.
It's Emerson. It's another Barcelona move. Obviously, he was at Betis last year. Did well. It was a co-ownership deal, if I remember correctly. Is this just something where Barcelona, I think, brought him back for 9 million euros and then they go and they sell him for, you know, the same summer and so they make a nice chunk of change?
The surprising thing was that he played against Getafe. Dest has been playing at right back and suddenly Emerson came into the side for that game, probably knowing that he was going to Spurs. He's another good athlete, good 1v1 defender. I think he's decent on the ball as well.
Better than Tanganga on the ball?
Better than Tanganga on the ball. Tanganga's an aggressive defender. He's got great pace. I'm not sure Tanganga reads the game particularly well at the moment. He reacts because he's got great pace. So Emerson, I think, is a decent player. Aurier's now gone, so there's no challenge there.
Is Tanganga more of a centre-back who's maybe undersized and has to adapt to different roles? Like, as a natural position?
Tanganga... when he has a good game, when he's defending really well, what a great defender he is. When Tottenham have more of the ball and he's expected to get high up the field and play little 1-2s and get great crosses into the box, that's where he's going to be found out. And then people say, he's a bit like Wan-Bissaka. They're going to say, he's not quite good enough in the forward areas. That's where Emerson could prove to be slightly
better. Do you
think
we might see an option now that you have Emerson in there of him going back three in some games?
Yeah.
You know, once obviously you're going to have Romero back and fit. Go back three, have Reguilon and Emerson
pushing
forward.
Nuno, that's the way he always played at Wolves. I think he'll want to play with a back three. And Emerson could do two jobs. He could do the right-sided centre-half if he wanted to. He could do the right wing-back position as well.
Spurs, yet to concede a goal this season. Mm. Just to be clear, and this is a defensive setup that includes Dyer and Skip. And Davinson Sanchez.
Yeah.
Just pointing that out. Yeah. Just pointing that out. Magic and
Lloris at his best at the moment, though.
Yeah, Lloris. Finally, Arsenal, your former club. They pick up a player from Bologna, Tomiyasu, who I think a lot of people, judging from the reactions to him, a lot of people in England weren't familiar with him. He played for Bologna. You didn't get to see him in Europe. Very young. I like the guy. I like the price at what they got, which they got him around about, I think, 22 million.
Yep.
What's your take?
A good signing for Arsenal. I saw Bologna probably commentated on them seven or eight times, saw highlights of them more than that. And there was a particular game, it was against Juventus, when a certain Ronaldo started off against him. I think they were playing over the back three. He was playing on the right-hand side of a back three. Ronaldo had the ball taken off him two or three times, and Tomiyasu was a bit too aggressive for him and a bit too quick for him, so he moved somewhere else. And Tomiyasu then did it to the next player, and then they went down to 10 men. Bologna had a player sent off, and he played as the right back, and he looked just as good there. He was good in the 1v1 situations. He wanted to defend. He wanted to head the ball. He was a good old-fashioned right back. And I also think he's got the talent when he does get forward to get crosses into the box. He had great energy, and he almost made up that. He almost played two roles in that game. So when they went down to 10 men, he just kept everything going for
him. He's somebody who I'm really struck by his intensity.
Hmm.
I mean, we have certain stereotypes about Japanese players, especially younger players. But this guy really has no fear. I mean, he stood up to Siniza Mihailovic, and, you know, Mihailovic has said, like, oh, I see a little bit. Are you sure you're not Serb like me? Ha, 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 look, because I'm alpha male, macho. He's a little bit like that on the pitch.
Yeah. He's controlled as well. You know, he's aggressive, but controlled.
Yeah, you know, he's not Granit Xhaka.
No,
you know?
He's not going to throw his arms up in the air every time something's gone wrong.
No, I think this is a great signing. Mm. I think Arsenal... defensively,
Bellerin's gone, so there's a Chambers isn't a right back. Cedric has done okay.
I'm not going to ask you what Chambers is, frankly.
No, I wouldn't know what Chambers is. So Tomiyasu is a good signing.
And he goes into the when everybody's fit.
Hmm. Mind you'd think so, but the way Arteta has left some of the signings on the bench and put strange people, you know, the back three against Man City, I don't think anybody would have picked that. But so let's hope he gets a chance.
Right, if you brought him in, you assume he will.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, so we're going to take a little bit of a break from Cristiano because we talked about him a lot. But he's made it impossible to do that because, Robbo, last night Portugal played the Republic of Ireland in Portugal's World Cup qualifier. And to help us sort through that, because it was pretty remarkable, is Mark Ogden. Now, in case you were under a rock or you don't know this, Portugal were 1-0 down until minute 89. And then who else? Cristiano scores. And then Cristiano scores again, I think, in the fifth minute of extra time. Relevant because he broke Ali Dai's all-time international goal-scoring records. He's up to 111 goals at this stage. And according to my friend, Mr. Chip, it's the first time in the history of World Cup qualifying that a team was down a goal in the 89th minute, and one player scored two goals. No, it's not the first time it's happened. It's the first time the same player scored both goals. So there you go. Cristiano forcing his way back into our consciousness. This is pretty nice, yeah? But pretty special, Mark.
Yeah, absolutely. It was, you know, I think everybody turned up at the stadium last night hoping and expecting to score the goal to go beyond Ali Daei, because as we know, he equaled Ali Daei during the Euro, so his level, it was his record as well, but he moved clear last night. But it wasn't without its drama because, you know, 10 minutes in, he could have been sent off. He Portugal given a penalty and he grabbed the ball as you'd expect, and then he also lashed out at Dara O'Shea, who went to the ground, and a little bit of an awkward moment, but he survived that one, and then he missed the penalty. The Ireland goalkeeper Gavin Bazunu who saved his penalty, so it was going to be one of those horrific nights for Ronaldo. But you know, it was a classic night for Ronaldo. That the arms were being thrown up all over the place, he was trying to score from every opportunity, long range shots, you know, three times in the second half he had a long range effort that hit an Irish defender. He had a free kick saved in the 89th minute. But, as you know, Ronaldo never ever stops, and a great cross by Gonçalo Guedes in the 89th minute, and he headed it in. 6 minutes later, João Mario, another cross, headed that one in, so he got his two goals, and it was an amazing occasion. But I think just what you were talking about earlier about, you know, his performance last night and what it would mean in terms of how, going forward, what will he bring to the Premier League with United. The one thing that really struck me last night, and this has been evident for a while now, but he doesn't go past the player anymore. He's not this guy that would do a step over and beat his man. He just doesn't go past his defender anymore. But still, he's lethal when he gets a chance in the 6-yard box.
All right, Robbo, you don't need to go and beat players off the dribble and run past them to be a phenomenal footballer, right?
No, because he's changed the way he plays. He can't go past people now with trickery or pace because he hasn't got it anymore.
He can create shots for himself.
Yes,
he can buy himself very, very well. We need to. I mean,
absolutely, he can buy himself half a yard, 30 yards around the box to get a shot, and with both feet. That's one of his main attributes. He can shoot with both feet, and he's got the awareness. He can bend it round defenders. He can go through defenders' legs. He's aware around the box, and his main attribute is his spring and ability in the air. So that's his main attribute at the moment.
Augie, so on Monday, Jules and I talked endlessly about where he's going to fit into this United side. I think it's much more of an issue that people... I turned to Robbo before, said, I think a lot of United fans haven't seen him play in the last 3 years and the type of player he is now. But can you tell us a little bit? I watched it on TV. It looked to me like He was a part of a front three, starting from a wide position. It looked to me like it was a very attacking midfield three that they had with Bruno Fernandes and Bernardo Silva. Any clues from last night about how Solskjaer might use him?
Well, look at last night. He played most of the game down the middle. I mean, he played in every single attacking position last night. He started through the middle. And I thought he was frustrated against Ireland's defenders. Physically, when he's back to goal, he's not the same player. But at half-time, Fernando Santos brought in Andre Silva, put him through the middle. Ronaldo went to the left, and he got much more involved in the game. So I think Ronaldo on the front of the three, on the left, is his best position. But what that means for United, well, you know, Sancho out on the right, maybe Cavani through the middle, then you've got Ronaldo on the left. It's all very fluid. And we're talking about players that don't stick to the positions they start. But for me, he is still better off on the left-hand side, cutting in where his right foot is his stronger foot, obviously. I just think that's where he's a better player. He will drift inside, obviously, and win headers. But you can't play him through the middle. He's not going to be a centre forward in the number nine sense like Cavani is.
Okay, so, sorry, because I ask everybody, so we'll be discussing this further. So if that is your three, Sancho on the right, Cavani, or maybe Solskjaer, if only. Cavani, Greenwood, maybe. Rashford, maybe, through the middle. And then Cristiano. Is there a man in the hole and two holding midfielders? And is that man Bruno Fernandes? Or does Bruno Fernandes have to go and adapt to playing in the three?
Well, that's a big question. Because last night, for quite a while with Portugal, Bruno Fernandes doesn't perform particularly well. He doesn't link up well with Ronaldo. It's almost like Ronaldo, you know, suffocates him a little bit. But I think the bigger problem for Fernandes with Portugal is Bernardo Silva. Everything goes through Bernardo Silva. At United, his issue will be Pogba, whether it all goes through Pogba. So I think the Bruno Fernandes question is a big one, where he fits in. I'd imagine he will be the guy in the hole. But even last night, Ronaldo did drop into that number 10 role as the game wore on to try and get more into the game. So with Ronaldo, he will play wherever he wants, and he will get in people's way, and he will suffocate the space. So it'll be interesting to watch. Obviously, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is a tactical genius, and he'll find a way.
Well, all right, let's stick to this issue. We've heard Augie's prediction of how United might line up. I tried to understand what he was saying, but correct me if I'm wrong here. You have a front three, plus you have Bruno in the hole.
Yep.
And you have two holding midfielders. One of them, I presume, is Pogba. The other one can be, well, whichever, McTominay, Fred, or Matic, or whichever one doesn't stink that week. Yeah? Is that about right, Augie?
Pretty much.
Okay. Yeah, the holding midfielder. Does that work? And what are the potential pitfalls with that system?
The potential pitfall is that Ronaldo would go where he wants to go, and Augie's already said that. When he was playing for Juventus, I think Pirlo in the last season wanted him to play up front alongside Morata.
Yeah.
But when Augie again mentioned it, when it got a bit tough for him against defenders, when defenders were going into the back of him and he wasn't holding up the play, then he drifts wide. So then somebody else has got to go through the centre forward position.
Which is why he played about 89% of his minutes last season in the front two.
Yeah.
At Juventus.
Yeah.
Because so you had both a threat behind, which is really important,
yeah,
which you might not have so much if it's Cavani and Cristiano, although Sancho's got wheels. And on top of that, he can drop off and you still have somebody there.
But what is his main attribute now? In my view, his main attribute is when crosses come into the box, and he proved it for Portugal again last night, that he's one of the best players in the air in the penalty box. That's where he's going to score most of his goals.
Augie, the other concern, you seem very optimistic that you can play that front three, plus Pogba, who I'm not as down on Pogba as a lot of y'all are.
I love Pogba.
No, people, but, you know, but it seems to me every time Pogba plays deep for United and United, you know, concede goals, it's somehow always his fault. He's too lazy. He's not getting around the pitch. All the ex-pros appear on television. You know who I'm talking about. And they talk about Pogba doesn't do enough for you defensively, whatever. So is that a problem? Because Bruno Fernandes isn't exactly Roy Keane off the ball either. So if my midfield three is Roy Keane, stationary Matic, or one of the other ones, and Pogba, is that an issue? Is that a problem?
I think the problem is Fred. Whenever Pogba plays with Fred, Pogba has to play his own game and play a game to watch Fred. If Matic plays, obviously Matic's a bit older. I think Matic's experience gives Pogba the confidence to play his more of a natural game. But with Fred, you get the impression that Pogba's having to firefight all the time because Fred, Fred plays a lot of games, but he can't tackle, he can't pass, he can't run, he can't score goals, doesn't create, so I don't know what he does. But he also, it creates a sense of It's not so much panic.
Okay, let's stop picking on Fred. Fred, sorry if I jump in there. Let's stop picking on Fred, right? Let's pretend it's Matic or McTominay, because I'm more interested. I'm not interested in... I just my view. I think it's your view too, right? Yeah. Neither of those three guys is particularly good to be a world-class player right now. Maybe McTominay might, but one day, I'm not sure. I don't think so. But you, the point is you've got one defensive midfielder, plus Pogba, plus Bruno Fernandes, yeah? Can that be pulled off in the modern game?
Yes, because this year United have got a better centre-half than Varane. Varane and Maguire look a better unit than Maguire and Lindelof, Maguire and Bailly. Maguire looked so much at ease at the weekend at Wolves with Varane alongside him. I think with Varane and Maguire, it will give United that extra solidity behind the midfield, and that'll make a difference. So I think they can get away with one holding midfielder, especially at home. There'll be games away from home where they have to, you know, rethink it a little bit. And I do think this Pogba-Fernandes thing will become an issue against the better teams. But I think with Varane, Varane makes a massive difference to the whole dynamic of that defensive unit.
That's a really good point, and one that Jules and I hadn't considered. See, that's why we've got you guys, the experts, on. Do you think a Varane Maguire partnership, the fact that they're going to be potentially so solid now, that you can have one, whichever one of the three is, and again, I don't want to go pick on bully Fred like Augie just did, but whoever one it is, do you think that can work? Do you think Solskjaer can move the other pieces around?
Yeah, it can work. As long as they... Manchester United are going to dominate most of the games in terms of possession. And if you looked at some of the Barcelona players under Pep Guardiola and some of the Man City players, you wouldn't ever say they're good defensive players. But because they have a system where they're dominating the play and then when they lose it, they try and win it back as quickly as possible, that's what Manchester United are going to have to do if they've got Pogba and Fernandes as two of the three midfield players. And they've also got to be careful how far the fullbacks go forward. They can't go forward too early. They've got to be in a position ready to, if they are counter-attack, to get back into a good defensive position.
So on that point, again, a different team, different players, but if you're talking about how the formula is, then will be a lot of possession and then quickly recovering the ball via quick pressing. That's what Pirlo tried to do. And Cristiano's stats, in terms of pressure regains, in terms of pressing, he wasn't last in Serie A. Zlatan Ibrahimovic was, but Zlatan Ibrahimovic is old enough to be his dad, just about. Does it make sense to ask Cristiano to go and chase fullbacks and stuff and win the ball back and press?
But what Ronaldo, he wasn't going to do that. So that's why when the first season he was there, Matuidi did a great job for Juventus.
How's Solskjaer going to fix that?
I disagree with Oggy. I would play Ronaldo up front. He might not be particularly good with his back to goal, but he won't stay in position. He won't do any defending when he goes out.
Up front on his own?
Up front on his own, with the two wider players, narrower. So there's got almost a front three that can change their position slightly. You don't have to play Greenwood high and wide on the right-hand side and Sancho high and wide on the left-hand side. They could play like Chelsea did a couple of years ago when, I think it was under Conte, where the two wide players, Hazard and Pedro, played very narrow alongside Diego Costa.
And then you would still have the wheels and the threat behind.
Yes.
Because obviously they could run past it. Yeah. Augie, do you like that?
Not really, on the basis that I think that United are better when they have a striker like Cavani up front. Obviously, Cavani is not on his peak, but somebody who holds the ball up and it stops coming back. You know, for too long, United, pre-Cavani, had nobody up front capable of holding the ball, and it would forever go back. United would be, you know, in a defensive situation too often. So I don't see Ronaldo offering that kind of strength of a centre-forward. But you're right, obviously, if he plays that position, he'll score more goals. But I do think that with Ronaldo, because of his kind of liability to roam around, you can't rely on him to play that number nine role. I just don't think it in the Premier League anyway. I don't think you can rely on him to do that.
I think if you play a narrow front three, it's really difficult to have any room for Bruno Fernandes in the team, especially because your fullbacks aren't particularly good at going forward, unless Wan-Bissaka is driving his Lamborghini.
Luke Shaw is. I mean, Luke Shaw's so many assists. Luke Shaw's become a much better attacking fullback than, you know, I think Andy Robertson, Andy Robertson assists, so you can't say that Shaw's not a good attacking
fullback. Right, but Wan-Bissaka isn't. And also, as far as Luke Shaw, I'm not as high on Luke Shaw as all you people are, and I don't particularly care about the assists, because I think it's different when you've got a winger in front of you or whatever. But yes, Luke Shaw is fine going forward. I will correct myself. But as a combo, we're not talking Alexander-Arnold and Robertson, right? They're not going to hit crossfield balls to each other and create, certainly not from the right-hand side. That would be one of my concerns. But I do wonder, can you have that? Can you play narrow like that? And, you know, you mentioned Pedro and Hazard.
Hazard did it with Diego Costa and did it very well.
But can you do that with Bruno Fernandes? Or do you need to make all sorts of tactical tweaks to retain your balance everything?
If you play the midfield three, Pogba is okay going wide. So he'll be narrow at times. He'll work with Shaw. When Shaw goes higher up the field, Pogba will go infield. Right. When Shaw's a bit deeper, Pogba could go wide. Sancho can then go wide. And one of the midfield players, Bruno Fernandes, is starting to make a lot more forward runs than he did in the first season he was there, where he was very much the playmaker. Now he's running beyond the centre forward, so he's got the energy to do it.
Are you sold? Are you sold, Augie? Just give me your final verdict. Are you sold? And just tell me this, because Jules and I thought, okay, fine, I'm going to hear from both of you on this, just so we can wrap up our Ronaldo thing for now. I thought, even with this, I still felt that Chelsea, Liverpool, and City, in whatever order you want to put them in, are still substantially ahead of United in terms of the prospects.
Mind you,
am I wrong?
Just going back to a point, Augie, mate. Augie said, Manchester United for quite a while haven't had a player that's good with his back to goal that can't hold up the play. Who was the best player in Serie A by a mile at holding up the play? And who's going to be the best player in the Premier League?
Let's not go back. You're talking about Romelu Lukaku. But, of course, they've all decided Lukaku can't drop a bag of cement, right? And the football gods and the whatever committee and all those clever people at United said he was rubbish. So let's move on from him. But, yeah, can I just get an assessment here from you? About this.
Well, I mean, I'll go first since I missed my flight. I think that the top four are very close this year. I think City would have been a lot further ahead. Had they signed a striker, they would have pulled away. But I think without the centre forward, I think City are now back in the pack. Chelsea, for me, look strongest. I do think that United, with having signed Varane and Ronaldo, I think they're the fourth out of the top four, but it's very close.
Okay, Robbo?
I think it's very close as well. I don't think the signing of Ronaldo makes them that much better. Varane is the big signing for them. He's making them much better defensively. I think it'd be a great partnership with Maguire. Both read the game well.
Ahead of Liverpool.
I have them ahead of Liverpool. I wasn't convinced by Liverpool at the weekend, so I have them just ahead of Liverpool.
All right, there you have it. Augie, thanks so much. Go catch your flight. And again, congratulations to Cristiano Ronaldo, who is now the men's all-time leading international goal scorer. All right, enough Cristiano, enough Augie. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Edin Dzeko and Antoine Griezmann score. Jules Koundé gets sent off as France and Bosnia draw 1-1. Robbo, it's 4 points dropped already for the defending world champions. Please tell me it's no reason to worry. And bear in mind, Jules is listening. Do not
seriously. You think Ukraine and Finland are going to overtake them? France are by far the best team. They haven't had a great start. They weren't great at the European Championship, but they've got good enough players. They've got a coach that knows what he's doing, I think, and they'll qualify easily. Erling Haaland scores and rattles the crossbar, but Louis van Gaal's Holland hang on for a point in Oslo. Gab, this group is so tight. This was a pretty big game for the Dutch, wasn't it?
I think it was a huge game. And what was just as huge was the fact that Turkey also played the same night. Cengiz Under, by the way, scoring again. He's back, the Undertaker. They drew 2-2 with Montenegro, giving up a goal in the seventh minute of stoppage time. The reason this is important is Turkey are on 8 points. Holland, Montenegro, and Norway are on 7. I think they've all played 4 games. And bear in mind, only
is this going to be the tightest group?
Well, only the top team automatically gets through. And Turkey are a tough out. They're a talented team. Norway, of course, you've got Holland and Udegaard and whatnot. So, yeah, I think this is a really tough one. Can you imagine if Van Gaal screws this up and it's 3 tournaments out of 4 without the Dutch, the only exception being the Euros, because, you know, even imaginary countries qualify for the Euros? Come on, man. Denmark beat Scotland 2-0 as Mikkel Damsgaard puts on another masterclass. Robbo, Scotland boss Steve Clarke is getting criticized for playing Andy Robertson at right back. Let me ask you, in your technical estimation as a coach and a former professional, is it really that big a deal for a left-footed guy to play at right back? Is it really?
Some players can do it. I don't think Robertson can, because Robertson's strength is galloping down the left-hand side and whipping crosses in with his left foot. He hasn't got a right foot whatsoever.
So gallop down the right side, cut it back, and whip them in with your left foot. That's what
Maldini could do. And the same when you're defending. You know, he's happier when people are going down the outside and he can go and slide tackle with his left foot. It's more difficult when you're playing on the right-hand side. That would be my view anyway. Ansu Fati will wear the number 10 shirt for Barcelona when he finally returns from injury. Given the guy who had the shirt for more than a decade before him, is this a wise choice?
I think if you're going to do this, you have to be a bazillion percent certain that it's not going to affect him. He's not going to feel the weight of Lionel Messi's shirt, and it's still his shirt. It is the Barcelona 10 on his shoulders. I don't know Ansu Fati personally, but I'll tell you this. I do know he's 18 years old. I do know that he hasn't played since November. He could do without a big weight. Personally, I think they should have just retired it, like Roma did with Totti. Don't go and assign the number. Apparently, in La Liga, you can't do that. You have to give the shirt sequentially 1 to 25. Again, that which is a stupid rule, but man, if that's the rule, then give it to somebody else. Give it to the third keeper. Give it to somebody who's never going to play. I don't mean you, Umtiti. There are ways around this to avoid him having the weight of that shirt. Sticking with shirt numbers, the Cristiano Ronaldo shirt saga isn't over. They're pretty confident at 7. As of right now, we don't know that they're going to get this exemption from the Premier League. I don't care about this at all. Do you?
Gab, I'm 100% with you. I couldn't give a monkey's whether
you didn't have shirt numbers when you were playing.
No, it was 1 to 11, and the subs were 12 and 14.
I thought it was before shirt numbers when you start.
No. It was 1 to 11. I couldn't care less. I mean, surely it doesn't make a player what number you've got on your back. He can play with 10, he can play with 35.
What number did you wear most of the time?
Usually I was 7.
Okay, but 7's a cool number. You had Ronaldo's number. You want to keep it for yourself, but Ronaldo can't have it.
Depending where I was playing on the day. If I was playing central midfield, for some reason, I wore 7. If I was playing on the left-hand side of midfield, I wore 11. And if I was playing at right back, I wore number 2. So, yeah. Now, we're expecting the European courts to deliver a ruling on the Super League next month as the three rebel clubs push forward. And Gab, Real Madrid, Barcelona and Juventus have reportedly hired a PR firm in the meantime.
Yeah, so look, the PR firm's neither here nor there. Now, they're actually outed. The last PR firm they had, obviously, they got all sorts of abuse and I think even threats. This one, I'm not going to mention who they are, but it's online. You can look them up if you really want to. I don't think they're going to do anything until this ruling comes out. It's an important ruling, and basically the ruling will... Well, we don't know that we're going to get a ruling, but if they decide to rule on it, they will be tasked with ruling whether UEFA can be both competition organizer and regulator and governing body. If they rule they can't, then clearly it's going to strengthen the case of these three clubs, and we'll see how things go from there. If they come out with a definitive answer the other way and essentially give them an antitrust exemption, like, for example, has happened in Major League Baseball in the U.S., then I think for a while the Super League thing is going to go away. If not, stay tuned. Jerome Boateng is back, having signed a 2-year deal with Olympique Lyonnais. Robbo, he's 32, sure, but he did start most of the season last year. He looks fit. This is a good pickup, right?
Yeah, I think he's an excellent player. He reads the game well. I think he had a hard time last year because Bayern were trying to play this high line, which I don't think particularly suited him. He's good on the ball. He hits those big diagonals out to the wide players. I think he'll have a good season for Lyon. I think they've got a good sign in there. Now, Granit Xhaka has tested positive for COVID while on international duty. Gab, are you going to blame international football for putting the players at risk?
Yeah, I put this question in on purpose because, correct me if I'm wrong here, but... he tested positive on a Wednesday. There's an incubation period. It's pretty obvious that he was infected before going. And look, he was infected where he lives. Where does he live? He lives in London. He lives right here. He's surrounded by a situation where there's no restrictions on going in stadiums and pubs and whatever. Maybe it's more dangerous there than with the Swiss national team. So just please leave it. This idea that travel automatically is so dangerous. No, it all depends on many other factors. Ederson has signed a contract extension in Manchester City through 2026. Robbo, how important is it for a club to have a settled keeper situation?
It's vital because the way Man City play, Ederson is so important to them. We've seen it over. He didn't have a greatest game, the last one, but he's a wonderful player on the ball. I think he'd do a great job over the next coming years. Good signing or good contract extension. Now, Falcao is also back, having cancelled his contract at Galatasaray and signed for Rayo Vallecano in La Liga. He's 35. Is this purely a romantic choice?
It probably is, but it's a wonderfully romantic choice. He scored a couple of goals for Galatasaray. If he's fit,
I like it. Everton pick up Salomon Rondon from China and reveal that they tried to sign Donny van de Beek but were denied by United. Robbo, will Rondon help? And why wouldn't United let van de Beek go?
Rondon, I think, will be a good signing. As for van de Beek, I think he's a very good player that for some reason Solskjaer doesn't like or doesn't...
He obviously likes him enough to keep him around or doesn't dislike him enough to...
I think they don't want to concede that they've made a big mistake on him. So they're keeping him at the moment. But he's not going to get many games, is he? Not going to get much game time, particularly with the new signings they've
got. He's on the Phil Jones plan.
Yeah. Tottenham have cancelled Serge Aurier's contract after 4 years at the club. Gab, your thoughts?
My thought is that I remember Aurier years ago. I remember speaking to a scout. In fact, I think it might have actually been our pal Tor Christian Carlson, who was so excited about young Aurier, saying, like, he's like Dani Alves. And I think it's kind of sad that it's ended up this way. I think there was factors elsewhere. He's had many disciplinary issues. He's had other issues where he's simply not
on the field good. And off the field?
Both on and off the field, as we know. I wish him well, and I hope he can be a solid pickup for somebody after 28 years old. He's got more to give. Martin Odegaard has revealed that he doesn't really enjoy the fact that Amazon are filming their, quote, all or nothing documentary series at Arsenal this year. Can you blame him, Robbo?
To a certain degree, no. I agree with him because on these documentaries, they can pick and choose what they put on them, you know, and it's never accurate of what goes on at a football club. Remember the Tottenham one? They made Jose Mourinho look a really nice chap and a great coach, all those things that he can be. And Dele Alli was a troublemaker, wasn't he? And sort of not put in the best possible light. Yeah, so it's depending on how they edit it.
The club have editorial control, right?
Oh, yeah, that's the problem quite often. The club have the editorial control, and they can pick and choose who they make look good or not.
So if they decide that they don't want to make Odegaard look good, they can stitch all the Odegaard
as he's a
together.
New signing, they'll probably make him look quite good.
You would think so.
Aaron Wan-Bissaka has been fined £160,000. The United fullback was found guilty of driving while disqualified, driving without a licence, and driving without insurance. Oh, and he was in a Lamborghini as well. Gab? Not very smart.
Yeah, I don't understand this. I don't. It's just so foreign to me, right? I can understand a Lamborghini, and I can understand wanting to drive it fast, and then you get points on your license, and you get a ban. Fine, or rather, not fine. I'm not encouraging it, but it is something I can picture myself doing. What I cannot picture myself doing, and this is why I just simply can't relate to it, is after I've been disqualified, I would go without a license, without insurance, hop in. Presumably, it's my Lamborghini, right? So why would I, given how much a Lamborghini costs, why would I not insure it and get in trouble again? I can't conceive of this. You know, we see him on the pitch. We've seen him speak. He seems a clever guy. He seems a clever player. I know we've all pointed out that going forward, he's not Cafu. Fine, many people aren't. But I don't get this. Is this in character?
I'm not sure it is, but wouldn't it, to a normal person, be almost, you could go to prison for something like that? I would have thought, for all those things.
I don't know. Unlike you, I don't have a legal background, but I just simply don't get this. I don't get it. Sorry, Aaron. Hopefully he bounces. Maybe it'll do him some good. You know, maybe gets himself a driver, you know.
Like you've got.
Yes. Yeah, it does.
You could I like his cap, the one that you've got. I like the cap that he wears. It looks very
exactly.
good.
Got to be professional. We've mentioned Jack Wilshere before and how he wants to make a comeback. He's closer to a comeback in Serie B. Dennis Wise is the new chief executive at Como. Did you know that?
I certainly didn't know that.
All right. Should have been better prepared. And the club are giving him a shot. Robbo?
Well, he was obviously a top player, but he's had his problems with injuries. I think he's... I don't think he'll ever be the player that he once was. I think it's going to be difficult for him to stay fit.
Mr. Negative, how about celebrating the fact on the shores of Lake Como he's going to launch his career?
At least he's playing. That's the main thing. Or going to try and play. Now, Jamie Vardy is a part owner of a football club in upstate New York called Rochester Rhinos. Or it was called that until yesterday because they've rebranded as Rochester New York FC.
I'm going to jump on the bandwagon started by my colleague Hercules Gomez. This is really stupid, and it's stupid to the point of being offensive. They will have to
stop being negative, Nelly. That's what you said to me.
No. I mean, this is completely different. This is taking a football club that's been around for 25 years, that had built its own dignity and its own credibility in Rochester, which, by the way, hometown of Eastman Kodak, and then all of a sudden
these guys say, oh no, let's call it Rochester New York FC so that we get the branding of New York. And of course, FC, because it's a football club. And of course, as you've seen many times in the US, a lot of American clubs and MLS have gone and changed their name. Now, look, I don't have an issue if, you know, you were the Dallas Burn and you decide to become Dallas or Dallas FC or FC Dallas or whatever the hell they are. But Rochester Rhinos, this is something distinctive. This was something that actually worked in Rochester for a really, really long time. They didn't have subsidies, wealthy owners. Rochester's not that big a place. And then you come on. I'm not going to blame Jamie Vardy. I'm blaming his entourage of advisors and snake oil salesmen and marketing men that changes. This really, really annoys me. Really, really annoys me. Bring back the Rhinos.
I can tell. I can tell.
Bring back the Rhinos. That's what I say. Right. I'll be back on Monday to do this all over again with one Julian Lawrence, and I'll be asking him how his holiday was. Robert, thanks for coming
Always
on board.
Always a pleasure, Gab, being with you.
Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.